providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the back half of this show, we are shifting our focus more to the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes the Eye on Energy Report, which is a free letter that Joseph shares more of the macro drivers around the oil and natural gas prices. And just as a reminder, I was just at Joseph's annual conference in Calgary, where I got a chance to sit through a lot of company presentations, meet with a lot of companies, and reconnect with a lot of companies. And also in Joseph's new couple rooms in that conference, a focus more on the green energy transition, a number of companies that were there. So I really enjoyed, again, being at that show. And I do want to spend more time on more company details throughout this interview. But as we always do here, Joseph, let's start off with some of the macro drivers, starting off with the oil price. And I just really want to know how you are balancing out the constant supply demand data that you go through, but then also, again, balancing out this war that's going on, Israel and Hamas, and how that has impacted price more in the shorter term. How are you balancing out all these factors right now, Joseph?
Well, let's talk first the fundamentals and why, where the price of oil should be based on fundamentals, and then we'll talk about the war and war premium issues. Bank of America today came out with scenarios based on the war side, so I'll spend a bit of time there. On the price of oil, we're about 84, 85 U.S. today, and the price was 88, 89, you know, right after the invasion, and everybody worried about it spreading to Gaza in the north. But the fundamentals, Europe's seeing a slowdown, a severe slowdown, recession in Germany, demand numbers are lower there. The EIA data that came out today showed that the U.S. had demand down 1.8 million to 20.1 million. And the big fall-offs there were propane and other oils. But we also had finished motor gasoline down 80,000 barrels a day during the week. And the key thing that's going on there is the inventories also grew. They were up 1.4 million. They weren't expected to grow. And if you look at year-to-date, total consumption is down to 0.5%, 20.17 to 20.28 for a year ago. So the U.S. consumption is below a year ago. You have weak Germany, you have weak China. My view is we should be mid-70s based on the fundamentals. And, you know, we were heading down there, and then, of course, the events happened on October 7th.
Yeah, Joseph, we're going to have to just follow along with how these geopolitical events unfold, whether it does escalate to a larger scale situation or whether it stays more contained to the two sides as it is. But there's a lot going on in the oil markets that are pushing it higher, not just on the geopolitical side, but also on the macro side. It'll be interesting to see if we get that pullback you mentioned. What about nat gas, though? That's kind of a different market. It's had a little bit of a bump. In your recent Eye on Energy that you just put out, I think earlier today as we record this, you mentioned there's some bullish factors coming into the nat gas space and for the nat gas companies. What's your outlook there?
Yeah, well, winter is coming. Game of Thrones. That's what natural gas needs. We're $3 for NYMEX. We're below $2 for AECO. That number could pop because of the cold weather in Alberta right now. I haven't seen a new quote on that in the last 48 hours. So I think that we're looking at higher prices as we go through into the winter, November, December, January, February. And if we have big drawdowns of 200, 300 BCF a week, which will tell you that, that the electricity grid is going to be at maximum capacity, burning cogen, natural gas and cogen facilities, I think that would be something that really wakes up the price of natural gas. As well, in the second half of 2024, there's a number of new facilities coming on in the Gulf Coast, which will take more gas out of the U.S. system, which will mean they'll import more from Canada. And then in 2025, as you may have seen the articles from Tourmaline from Mike Rose, that's when the first LNG Canada train comes on, and they'll be taking 2 BCF. That'll tighten up supply in Western Canada, and we could be looking at $4 or $5 AECO, and better prices than that. in the LNG export market. So I think we're, you know, this is the, you know, that's why if I get this correction in the general market and it pulls, Q3 results are a little poor because of those lower commodity prices versus last year, we may get another great buying opportunity like we got in March of this year. If you remember, I had two buy signals kick in, one March 13th, one March 15th, and we added seven names each time to our action buy list. I'm expecting one more buy window coming before the end of the year. It could happen in the next few weeks if you know, things are cool in the Middle East and we see you know, inventories building, then we could get into the mid-70s, get ourselves our buy signal. On the other hand, it could be tax loss selling because if you look at a lot of the companies, their stocks are trading near their, you know, near their lows versus nearer their highs. And again, if you have weak markets, and you know, people will be forced to look at tax loss selling activity, and that could give us another opportunity to buy stocks at good prices.
All right, let's get into the stocks. As I said, I do want to focus a lot here and more recap kind of my takeaways from your conference and see what you have to say about some of the corporate strategies out there. Because one thing that I was, I think, a little bit surprised on is last year when I was at the conference, a lot of companies were excited about the cash flow they were generating and looking at different angles to invest that money, to grow, to continue to increase production. This year, it seemed like all, or at least most of the companies, were laser focused on returning capital to shareholders. That's what I heard from a number of companies that, quite frankly, their production results, their financials were not moving markets, but when they issued special dividends, increased their base dividend, that is what investors were paying attention to, and that is what moved their stock more than anything. Joseph, what does this environment mean for these stocks? Are you seeing the same thing?
Well, the companies are telling me that when they go on the roadshows, and of course there's been a lot of them by the brokers between the bank-owned firms and the oil-focused brokerage firms, that the institutional investors are now interested in the sector, especially the larger cap names. You have to have like $1 billion market cap to get portfolio managers to look at it, i.e. generalist portfolio managers. They're being told, look, I can get 5% risk-free. Give me my risk-free equivalent, and then I'll be willing to, you know, take a chance on your stock for the long term. So companies are being arm-twisted to pay regular and special dividends to give that yield, and then they're getting generalists willing to buy the stock. My view is it's a very short-term thinking approach. I think we should be looking again, continuing to look at the acquisition. You know, we saw recently that Tourmaline made another acquisition, and I think that you know, the guys who are the smart ones, who really, you know the sector and are willing to make the investment decision to build up, you know, I think are going to be the winners. And those who are just playing you know, Bay Street, Wall Street, you know, give me what the flavor of the month in terms of business decisions, are going to end up being the you know, they are going to be taken over by the acquisitors who say, look, you're not running your assets properly, we can do a better job, or your you know, we can lower overhead, we can, you know, we can concentrate facilities, we're better at hedging, and I think we're going to see a lot more M&A activity more in 2024 as we get closer to LNG Canada coming on. I think we'll see more consolidation in the Montney. And in the States, I think it's pretty clear that the U.S. Permian, Eagle Ford, and Gulf Offshore are the areas that are very attractive and are going to see more consolidation.
Well, Joseph, I'm glad you brought up M&A in the energy space, because that's something that we wanted to dig into a little bit. We saw the very high-profile ExxonMobil merger with Pioneer to get into that very area, the Permian and the Eagle Ford. We also saw Baytex take over Range Resources. So we've seen a couple M&A deals, but that Exxon deal really was kind of a shot heard around the market, and a lot of generalists did pay attention because it's such a high-profile company. Do you think that's going to spur on more companies to get on the stick and say, hey, rather than spending all of our free cash flow returning it to investors, maybe we should invest in growth?
You know, as I mentioned, you know, Bonavista was taken out by Tourmaline, so Mike Rose said, I want more assets in the foothills because I can see that working well within our own asset base currently. I think we're going to see more of that going forward. You know, I think some of the privates may just say, look, we're never going to get the value given our size. Maybe we'll sell out to a bigger company and take paper. So I think that the M&A side is going to be there. But I think, we're not going to see M&A in the oil sands. I think the industry there is as it's going to be. There'll be moderate growth maybe from SAGD producers, thermal producers, and conventional heavy oil industry producers. But I don't think you're going to see another greenfield oil sands project in my lifetime.
Now, Joseph, this has been a trend. These big mega mergers, mega takeovers, lots of money have been thrown around in kind of a select few deals. Are there any that stand out to you that you think really set up the acquiring company to, they already are major players, but to really take hold of a certain area or overall the market?
Let's talk about the Canadian one. If you look at the deal that Tourmaline did, it was half cash and half shares. So they were willing to, the vendor wanted to have shares because they wanted to stay for the upside. If you look at the Hess deal with Chevron, it was an all-stock deal. So the Hess family, which had built that thing over 50, 60 years, wanted to participate on the upside. And in case of Exxon, I'm not sure how they financed it, but I think there was some equity component there. So again, I think that the vendors are saying, the game isn't over. We like the sector, but we see the reason for mergers, but we want to be there on the merger. If some people want cash, they can get cash. But the majority of them are saying at this point, with stocks so cheap relative to the reserves, relative to where the reserves will be worth in a $100 oil or $125 oil environment, they still want to be equity holders. So if M&A wants to happen, you have to give equity to the vendors.
Well, other than M&A, Joseph, as far as growth, there are some companies that are just doing acquisitions of land near them, or they're bolting on more properties, but we're not seeing as much drilling activity as we have in the past. And it seems like a lot of companies, again, are so focused on returning value to shareholder through buying back their stock or special dividends, or some of them have paid down debt, but they're not really putting as much into drilling new wells. There are some exceptions, though. Where do you see the best growth profile in the companies that you had at your show?
Well, I think that, and just to give you the numbers here, the drill count in the States is down 19%. So 624 rigs last Friday versus 771. In Canada, we had 198 working versus 210. And so, the rig counts are down, but the productivity of the wells is better because they're doing long-to-reach horizontals. So that's why you're seeing the U.S. production holding at 12.3 million barrels a day on the oil side. And on the liquid side, liquids production is up 5.4% from a year ago, 8.4 million versus 7.98 million. So the NGLs are growing. And, of course, that light oil in the U.S. side is being exported because the refineries on the Gulf Coast are built for the heavier oils that they originally used to get from Mexico and Venezuela, and now Canada's the big provider of that heavy oil. So if I look at Canada and I look at companies that are wanting to grow, Crescent Point fits that bill, Paramount Resources fits that bill, of course Tourmaline, is always there, Whitecap Resources, after taking over XTO, may sell some non-core, but they're going to be a growth player longer term. Crew I see as a new as a grower in NuVista, Pinecliff, and then oily names like Surge are going to grow, and then some of the international names I can throw a few at you, but to me there are companies that have a growth focus, and that's the names that I prefer, and those are the ones we're spending time on. But as I said, with the lower commodity prices in Q3 of this year versus last year. And, of course, companies focus on debt repayment and as you said, return to shareholders. I think the comparisons that we see coming out in the next, tomorrow, it starts. Whitecap reports tomorrow morning, Precision Drilling, Imperial Oil is on Friday, and then the next 3-4 weeks are just heavily chock-a-blocked with for daily reporters, I think we're going to see company comparisons that may not, outside of doing an acquisition from one year to the other, like Whitecap did, where the numbers will be up. I think a lot of the companies that did not do acquisitions, the numbers may not be impressive.
So, Joseph, how do you balance that out then? If you do like growth, and these companies do need growth, the whole sector does need growth to a certain extent, especially with generally higher energy prices. But again, the market is not really rewarding them for spending this money, and there is risk attributed to when you spend on growth. So how do you figure out the ones that have the best growth profile and aren't just trying to grow in a market that's telling them not to grow?
Well, what I'm watching for is a couple of things. One, did they get their debt under control so that they can grow? So again, no balance sheet problems is probably the first thing you checklist. Second, you need facilities. If you're going to go after liquids-rich natural gas, you need to have pipeline access. You need to have compression stations. You need to be able to bring your product to market. So again, you look at all of those things and look at the presentations of the companies, of course, be on the quarterly conference calls and listen to what they're talking about in terms of infrastructure build to grow the companies over the next few years so that they can control their own destiny and not have to find supply or takeaway capacity from other players where they could be interrupted by the other player putting his own gas in and not letting you in the pipeline. The other, of course, is egress for oil. We have Trans Mountain hopefully coming on sometime in 2024 with a blowout cost. But once that oil gets sent to the West Coast, then really there's no more egress in Canada to bring oil to market. So that's going to be a problem. So if you're an oil player, what are you going to do? If you're a natural gas liquids player, then of course your natural gas liquids are going to always be needed by the oil sands players to move their product. And of course, because we still import a lot of NGLs, condensate from the U.S. So if you can bring on new condensate, you can displace imports from the States.
Well, speaking of capacity in the sector, we hear a lot of buzz still, Joseph, about some of the oil services companies, not so much the drilling companies, but the pipeline and services companies. Are there any of those that stand out to you that have a pretty good, robust future in front of them? Because they are pretty much at capacity, most of these companies.
Well, the ones I like that are doing things on both sides of the border. So CES Energy Solution provides fluids for drilling and fluids for producing in difficult wells. So they're a good one. I also like the companies in the fracking business because they have pristine balance sheets in the case of Trican and a strong one in the case of STEP. So I like those. The part of the area of the industry that still has to clean up their balance sheets are the drillers. They still have billion-dollar debt loads, Precision, Ensign. So I'd like to see more progress there before you could jump on and say, yeah, I want to own some of those names. But I think, looking at the frackers and looking at something like CES would be probably where I'd recommend people focus on. And we had all three of those companies, CES, Precision Drilling, and Ensign, presenting at our conference this year.
What about some of the royalty companies, too? I chatted with a handful of them. There are actually a couple more at the conference this year, I believe, than in the last couple of years. Do you like the royalty place?
Well, our clients do. They want income. We've got an older client base that are subscribers, so they asked us to cover it. So we covered Topaz first. We had Freehold there for the first time, and I'm going to get to know that story better. And we had Source Rock Royalty, which you guys know. Brad Daugherty was there presenting his story. And then on the clean tech, we had a company called RE Royalty. So, part of it is TMX being the sponsor. They wanted us to move into the energy industry of today, but the energy industry of tomorrow. And they had one room that was clean tech, another room that was critical minerals. And so we're planning to have two rooms every year going forward so that people can see that we're not a bunch of dinosaurs in the old industry, but we're also bringing to them interesting companies for the energy industry of tomorrow.
Yeah, I spent some time in those TMX rooms, and I found it very interesting. There are some cool companies there trying some very different things and developing some unique technologies, too. I'm following up with a lot of those. So, Joseph, thank you very much for, again, hosting that conference. I look forward to next year's conference, and thank you for providing a bit of an overview on the macro, but also much more on the stock side. So, Joseph, thank you for your time this weekend. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Hope you all enjoyed it. We will have a full show for you next weekend, but as I mentioned, throughout the week might be a little bit less posting because we are at the New Orleans Investment Conference. Joseph, everybody listening, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Okay.